Blog Talk Radio.
To an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does that amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I'm super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. So we're going to try something new starting tonight, right?
Well, we're going to do something old, really. But, you know, there's really nothing new for us to do because we've done everything on this program. Let's face it. But we're going to do something we have done before. And we're gonna reinstitute that beginning this week. We're doing, rather than 1 hour-long show, for the next couple, 3 weeks or so, we're going to do a couple of half-hour shows a week, and then we're going to work our way back up to doing 3 30-minute shows a week, as we did up until, about a year, about 2 years ago. And it was a fun way to go. We got a little mucked up doing that with video, but we're not going to try video. We're just going to do an audio show, 30 minutes, twice a week for a few weeks, and then if everything works out, we'll do it 3 times a week. I think it's going to be great. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm on board. Let's give this a try.
super psyched about this. Well, we got a lot of great stuff to talk about tonight. We're talking about lighting up the universe, and I want to start with this first story. I don't know if you saw this, but one of those headlines where you read it and you go, no. But then you go, well, maybe, I don't know. And then you don't know what to think. But it was in The Guardian, a British newspaper, in their science department, and the headline was, "Matter will be created from light within a year," claim scientists. And the subtopic here was a subheading, "In a neat demonstration of E equals MC squared, physicists believe they can create electrons and positrons from colliding photons." So you take photons, you bounce them off each other just right, and you get matter. This will be, if they pull it off, if they actually create some electrons and positrons, just almost kind of closing the loop on being able to explain how the universe works, won't it? I mean, you know, the distinction between light and physical matter is about as well established as any two things could possibly be, you know, from day one, right? From the time we've been observing
right.
things, right? You would say, well, those are different. Those are not the same thing. And Einstein said, well, ultimately they are. Yeah, you know, it's all the same stuff. If you speed it up enough, slow it down enough, expose it to enough gravity, whatever extreme conditions you have to, Big Bang or a black hole or whatever you have to whip out to make it happen, ultimately, there's a fluidity even between light and matter, and these physicists think they're going to demonstrate that. What do you think? You think they'll pull it off?
Yeah, why not? I mean, it's just, we've already produced energy from mass using basically E equals MC squared. Why don't we just do a little algebra and kick the formula around a little bit and use... that C in E equals MC squared is the speed of light. So, you're basically taking light and producing mass. That's pretty neat. I can see that why they would want to do it. It kind of is a neat demonstration. It seems like modern science has been one demonstration of another of things that we thought were distinct not being necessarily distinct. First it was electricity and magnetism. Now we have electromagnetism, right? And then it was space and time, you know, and now we have space time. And light and matter, you know, like you said, well, completely different things, right? Well, maybe not. So,
and of course, light has that kind of duality built into its very nature. I don't know if you saw that XKCD cartoon I posted on Facebook today, but it's the two stick figures are in this. It's a photograph of a wheat field, beautiful wheat field, and one of them is saying to the other, "Well, when we observe them, they become amber particles of grain." So it's kind of
I kind of like that. No.
But that's, you know, that's the kind of built-in paradox of light. Is it a wave? Correct. Is it a particle? We don't know. But it's energy. It's not matter until you turn it into matter. And one of the things that's interesting to me about that, too, is that, I mean, it should be logical, I guess. You're going to get equal amounts of electrons and positrons. Positrons, of course, are antimatter, if I'm not mistaken. So we're getting... hopefully the particles, you know, fling off in opposite directions because you don't want them messing with each other. I assume the positron has to be around a nucleus before it's actually antimatter. But these would just be free floating electrons and positrons. Still pretty interesting.
Wouldn't it be interesting if this was a way that they could efficiently create antimatter? You know, to be used in perhaps something like a spaceship for drive.
Interesting.
That would be cool. That would be cool. Well, this is a path to efficient manufacture of antimatter. That would be cool.
One of the questions that occurred to me as I was reading this is, it's a great, what's the word I'm looking for? Great exhibition of... core fundamental principles of nature. But is there any practical application to this? And one of the physicists quoted in the article says is, well, it's not like we're going to be, you know, taking light and turning it into everyday objects anytime soon. But, possibly as the basis for generating antimatter to generate energy, because it is a fantastic way of, it is the most efficient way to generate energy there is. So you get more energy per matter-antimatter collision than, I guess, any other way of doing it, right? It's the ultimate exhaustion of matter for energy.
Well, the thing is, we won't know, until we go down the road a little bit. It's, neat kite-flying Benjamin Franklin, but will this electricity be of any use, you know?
Right,
We just, they didn't know. It took generations of scientists to understand electricity and to create the modern world with it. So the thing is, we won't know for a while, probably.
Well, one of our visionary technologies that we talk about all the time is the universal assembler, the machine that can make anything, the replicator from Star Trek, and then some. And the original image we get of that is from K. Eric Drexler's book, Engines of Creation. And in that, you know, he talks about if you got basically soil, right, and water, you can make anything you want. I think actually just soil, just any material you can put in there, and you can turn it into just about anything else. Well, this might even take the whole idea a step further, right? What if you could just feed light in?
He said, Drexler actually said, you know, with the proper machine, you could, you know, sunlight and dirt could make anything.
Yeah, that's
interesting that, that he would say light, and here's this article talking about, you know, taking light and making matter with it. Now, I think what Drexler had in mind was a little different. I think he was talking about a solar-powered machine, but it's interesting. There's
simplify the model one step further, just with sunlight, and you can make anything you want. That's a long way off, and I don't even see anybody talking about that. But hey, that's what we're here to do, is to make those make those vital connections of advanced technologies that no one's even thought about before. Still, I think it's a really interesting idea, making matter from light, and look forward to seeing if they pull it off.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just one more thought on that.
You know, the moment of the Big Bang, Did it create matter, or did it create energy or light, or does it even matter anymore, right? If it's all one thing,
it's a good question. I think if you read about that, you start off with this kind of, plasma of some kind that's moving at impossible speeds and has no mass or has infinite mass. It's all border, it's like edge descriptions of things, right? Because you start from this singularity, which means that none of it makes any sense, right? And until you get to a universe that has matter and energy in it. But yeah, I think somewhere along the line, it's all just light turning into everything else, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Pretty darn cool. All right, so speaking of light, which is what our show is about tonight, interesting stories around light. We had Making Matter from Light, and then here's a somewhat more down-to-earth but still really promising, I think, development. Internet by Light promises to leave Wi-Fi eating the dust. And I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at that one.
Absolutely. This is cool. This one's really cool. Now, it's interesting because, using light, what they're seeing is something that internet speeds using Li-Fi. That's what they're calling this. I like that. Fidelity as opposed to wavelength fidelity, I think, is what Wi-Fi stands for. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. But Li-Fi gives internet access 100 times greater than our best speeds now. And so, what is that? What are we talking about? 23 DVDs per second, Bill. So, watching Netflix is not going to be a problem with your bandwidth. It's just not. That's just really cool at that point. You don't, 23 DVDs a second is faster than you would ever need to pull down information for the reasons we pull down information now, right? Because I remember going to college with a 40 megabyte hard drive, okay? And my thought was, well, this is stupid big. I'm never going to need 40 megabytes. I mean, I could type my entire 4 years of college and never fill up 40 megabytes.
Right.
The King James version of the Bible is 4 megabytes, okay?
Right.
So,
right.
A Bible is 4 megabytes. I've got a 40 megabyte hard drive. Why? Why do they even sell this? This is stupid, but hey, I'll take it. And so I go off to college. This was 1987, and 40 megabytes for you kids these days. I had the rockin'est computer in the dorm. Okay, there was no other, it was comparable to the amount of hard drive space on the mainframe in the computer science building. That it was a ridiculously large hard drive. But the point is that, we didn't create hard drives to just be able to type more. We did more things with it. Before long it was music and then video and then, so what are we going to do with the ability to download 23 DVDs a second? It's not going to be to watch 23 movies every second, that's for sure. So what do we do, Bill? Maybe are we downloading realities, maybe VR places to visit in virtual reality or something like that?
Exactly. Maybe we're bringing whole worlds into our immediate sphere. It's not that we're bringing them onto our box. I mean, that's part of the, I think part of the place where the whole analogy breaks down is you think, I'm going to load all this stuff down into our box. I mean, once we're moving in the direction of virtual reality, we're talking about loading huge amounts of information into our experience, right? Wherever that is, I guess ultimately
right.
It's going to be sitting on a box someplace, or on a disk or something, a virtual disk or something. I mean, it'll be sitting somewhere, but you're going to need that bandwidth to bring in the level of detail that we're going to be dealing with, whether it's live interactions with other people or whether it's highly accurate and realistic and sophisticated settings that we're putting ourselves into or highly complex tasks that we're taking on. But, yeah, we'll eat up that bandwidth a lot faster than we think, faster than you ate up that 40 megabyte hard drive back.
Which I actually did. I ended up eating up that 40 megabyte hard drive. This was pre-MP3. I graduated college before the thought of using it for music even entered my head. What I ended up filling it up with was games. But anyway, you know, you just don't know what you're going to do with a capability like that until you get it. And I suspect VR will be the thing. Now, when I look at that, I said, well, what's the secret? Why is it 100 times faster? Is it because light is faster than the radio? And I looked it up. No, radio moves at light speed.
Right.
So what's the difference? The difference is the amount of information that can encode onto light versus, amplitude modulation or frequency modulation of radio.
Right.
You can encode so much more information on light than that. And so that's the difference. So
that's why fiber optic cable, became the de facto way of sending signals around via cables, right? Just because you can encode so much information on a light signal. And now we'll take that same principle and, you just take the cable out of the equation. And we're able to encode information much, much more efficiently than we were back in the cable days. Not that there aren't still cables, but I mean, we're talking about doing some really sophisticated stuff here. And I guess this is just on the horizon. People are going to be using this in the fairly near future, it sounds like.
Yeah. I wonder, this is going to require a line of sight. That's one thing about Wi-Fi is that, I can go into any room of my house. I can open up my laptop and go to work. Is this going to require that every room in my house have the equivalent of like a laser pointer that, can focus on my laptop or other device? I don't know.
The thing about light is it doesn't go through walls very well, right? I mean, that's the nice thing about nice thing about a radio signal is you can just kind of permeate a whole area with that. Light's a little trickier that way. Although you can, by analogy, you can turn a light bulb and light a whole room up. I don't know if these LEDs will allow for that kind of transmission, or if you actually will have to kind of be pinpoint accurate on something. Although there will be ways to calibrate that. It's not going to be as big a problem as you might imagine, actually trying to line two light beams up, doing like your infrared detector on your garage door or door alarm or something like that. I don't think it'll be that it'll be that complicated, but that does add an element of complexity to the whole equation. Although with the bandwidth, with the loading speeds and everything, it sounds like it'll probably be worth it.
Yeah. Just reading here, Li-Fi has its drawbacks. It only works if a smartphone and other device is placed directly in the light, and it cannot travel through walls. Okay, so
you gotta let light shine on you.
You just have to have your light on in your room, in the room that you need that you want to use Li-Fi. That's interesting. So, if you're sitting in bed trying to read while or watch a movie off of Netflix or something. I guess you're gonna have to do that by good old fashioned Wi-Fi if you're not to have the light on in the bedroom and disturb your spouse. So I don't know.
I'm not sure how bright that LED light will be, or how disruptive that would be. We'll have to wait and see on those things.
It may not be something. Perhaps they can put it in waveforms that are infrared or something we can't even see. Maybe you can do it that way. So that's interesting.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, we got several more things we want to talk about. I just want to switch to something completely not all that light-related, but we brought it in anyhow, and that was actually it has more to do with brightness than lightness, and even that is just an analogy because we're talking about music. But you had shared with me, Stephen, this really, really interesting piece of music on SoundCloud. It was actually a very familiar piece of music, and yet not familiar. It's the... the Imperial March from, as we all know, from The Empire Strikes Back, or, everyone should know from The Empire Strikes Back, which is, describe that music, ominous, foreboding, sinister theme song associated with Darth Vader and the Empire and all things dark and evil.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. That's the one. Yeah. It's that, and yet it's not that, because... one little change has been made. Basically, our artist here, Les Tozia, has taken the Imperial March and played it in a major key. And we're not going to play the whole thing, but I want you all here just to hear a little bit of this. I feel great. I don't know about you, but
it sounds like a patriotic song, doesn't it?
It sounds like a happy song. Okay. Yes, it's a John Philip Sousa march. Or in the comments on this page that you shared, it's somebody said it sounds like the theme music from one of the classic Nintendo games, maybe something that would be playing in the background as you finally made it into the castle or something like that. I think it has a little bit of that.
Yeah,
kind of a
little bit. Yeah,
feel to it too.
You know, there is a political metaphor to be made here, Phil. I'm not sure if I'm the best one to make it, but it's the distinction perhaps. We may have the best of intentions and go into something with in our brains we have this idea that the outcome of whatever it is that we're doing maybe politically is going to be the Imperial March in major key, and it turns into the nightmare of the Imperial March in the minor key. So I don't know, maybe it's a cautionary tale in there somewhere.
Somehow it is that the same ingredients give you something very very bright and happy or something very dark and ominous is very interesting. I think it says an awful lot more than we get into tonight, that's for sure. But it's nice to have.
Yeah, we're not.
Nice
we may not
be the right
guys to get into that, but there's.
Oh no! Give us time. We would be the right guys. No. We would totally be the right guys. What I'm saying is we don't have time tonight. That's my point. Okay. I feel like we strayed a little bit there, Stephen. But there is there's a real change emotionally, everything, in what occurs with that, and all that's happened is the music has been moved into a different key. It makes me think about the studies where they turned the lights up in the factory and productivity went up. You know, it's that kind of thing. It's you brighten things up, and I don't know, everything improves. So my advice is shed a little more light in your life. Okay, we got a couple other things I want to get to before we run out of time, and these are two videos that you shared, so we're not going to try to cut to the videos or anything. We're just going to talk about them a little bit. But these were both awesome and kind of similar and kind of different. But one of them was this Samsung SmartThings Future Living Report that you had shared. And I got to tell you, I love everything in that video. But I just more than that, I love the fact that it exists. So we've got the link there in the show notes. I recommend everyone go watch this thing. This is basically Samsung talking about technological developments we can expect in the years to come. And it reminded me of nothing so much as the kinds of things you used to see from companies like GE or General Motors back in the 60s, right?
This is the sort of thing that you would see at a World's Fair Expo or something like that. Back in the when the World's Fair was in New York City, I believe that was in the 50s. Things like that eventually became part of the World of Tomorrow at Disney and places like that. It's just real optimistic and coming from a corporation, a company that has we see so little of this these days that it's kind of refreshing, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I jotted down some of the topics, so let me just share a few of these because I was writing them down as I saw them. But obviously, listing them doesn't do them justice, so you got to watch the video. But towering megastructures to dwarf today's skyscrapers, and think Blade Runner. Okay, those big pyramid-like buildings in Los Angeles. They talk about those. They talk about earth scrapers extending 25 stories or more into the earth. Underwater cities becoming a reality, using the water to create breathable atmospheres. I love this one. Personal flying drones, some strong enough to fly our homes around the globe for holidays. That image was just so awesome. The idea of, you've got a house with that you can attach a drone to, and you can just fly your house around. Fantastic combination of different ideas. Practical? No. Cool? Totally. So check it out. Download dishes and 3D print our meals. Virtual meetings via holograms. By the way, both of these, Stephen, downloading dishes and 3D printing our meals and virtual meetings via holograms, probably good examples of the kinds of things we'll be using all that Li-Fi bandwidth on, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. We couldn't get it any other way. I think we got to do that.
Yeah, we're having to do stuff like that. And also Medipods to determine if you're really ill, and colonizing space. They talk about first the moon, then Mars, then beyond. I don't know that I would necessarily agree with that order. I think we might colonize, but we might go to the moon first. We might go to Mars first. We might go to low Earth orbit first. But I love that they, you know, that they had a case to make and that they made the case. What the specifics are, I think, are less important than the fact that here's a company, Korean company, Samsung, thinking about the future the way we used to think about the future. I just think it's terribly refreshing, and I encourage everyone to watch it. Did you have a favorite part from that video?
Well, you know, the whole thing was great. I love the flying cars, and you know, where we're going, we don't need roads. She
quoted the
you know, Doc Brown line. That was pretty great. I love the sign off at the end where she basically says, and you know, this is coming sooner than a lot of people think, and you know, and in fact, many of you will live to see it.
I kind of noticed both of those statements are things that are pretty familiar to, you know, pretty familiar to listeners of this show. I felt that, who knows, maybe there's somebody at Samsung who even listens to us. That's kind of warms my heart to think that might be the case, especially if they're going to pay us something for that. But anyway, the other video was also cool, and this is not put on by a big company. This is an individual named Brian Johnson, who just got together with, apparently he knows a lot of really smart people working in industry, working in academia in various settings, doing interesting things, and he talked to them. Some of them are people we know. Erica Lives is one of our co-authors on The World Transformed, and all of them are totally fascinating people. It's a quick watch, but it's just mind-blowing idea on top of mind-blowing idea. I enjoyed it immensely, just these really smart people talking about, you know, things like, well, we got to digitize, you know, the basically all of medicine, because we're going to digitize life, and you know, we're going to turn trees into machines that grow houses, and just a lot of the kinds of things that we've talked about so many times on this program, in very practical, you know, matter of fact way, discussed by people who, I don't know, some of them sound like they have a fair shot at making some of these things happen.
It's a 5-minute and 46-second video, and he basically tries to condense about 20 TED Talks into that 5 minutes and 46 seconds.
That's a good way of putting it, yeah.
It's well worth your time. Yeah, it's well worth your time. Check it out. That's, you know, I found it fascinating also. It's a very, very fertile, the cross-pollinization of all those ideas, you know.
Well, I really like that, too, is they would – one person would talk, and then we'd go to someone else. We'd be talking about, you know, programming matter with atoms, and then we'd go to someone else who's talking about decoding biology into zeros and ones, and pretty soon that's talking about turning material science into an information technology. So the ideas would sort of – it was like an interesting conversation between these individuals, although they weren't literally talking to each other. But it definitely spoke to me, and I think it will to anyone who watches it. Definitely worth checking out, and – I think it will lighten up your life somewhat. Well, you know, Stephen, I think that does it for this.
That does it for this evening.
For this evening. We are going to be back again, let's just say, back again later this week. We'll be back on Wednesday evening with an all-new show. We're going to be talking about artificial intelligence and the impact that it's having on our world. Stephen, look forward to talking with you then. Thank you all for being with us. And until next time, live to see it.